Support for Science Friday comes from the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science, technology, and economics in the modern world. Learn more at sloan.org.
This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. If you saw the sci-fi blockbuster Avatar, you probably remember that movie's epic final fight scene. In that scene, Jake Sully battles it out with the bloodthirsty Colonel Quaritch.
Get up, Quaritch! It's all over.
Nothing's over while I'm breathing.
I kind of hoped you'd say that.
Oh, I hate it when that happens. It just spoils my day. Actor Stephen Lang plays Colonel Quaritch. In that scene, he fights Jake from inside something called an amp suit. It's a 16-foot mechanized skeleton. But if you're wondering how Lang managed to act in that thing while blasting through a forest in a 16-foot metal suit, well, he did and he didn't. Lang provided the performance, but the face you see in that amp suit is a digital double. It was created by scientist and CGI wizard Paul Dubevic. How do you create convincing digital doubles? And will digital doubles doom human actors like Stephen Lang? We're going to ask them. They're both here with us. Stephen Lang is an actor. His roles include Colonel Quaritch in Avatar, Thomas Stonewall Jackson in Gods and Generals. Welcome.
Thank you.
We can't offer you that kind of excitement, but... Paul Dubevic is a chief visual officer at USC's Institute for Creative Technologies. Paul, welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you.
Let's talk about making convincing digital doubles. Why is that so hard to do?
Well, as it turns out, the human face is something that we have so much experience looking at, and particularly recognizing movie stars. There's actually cells in my brain that have been programmed to recognize Stephen Lang himself, whatever he shows up in. And if there's the slightest bit wrong in a digital representation, we're going to think it's pretty fishy.
Don't they have a word for that, the uncanny valley?
That's exactly it. And in fact, if you get a digital character that looks good, but not quite there, it's actually worse than not even trying at all. If it's some things are right and others are not, then you can have a sense of revulsion. And this is what Masahiro Mori described as the uncanny valley with respect to robotics some time ago.
Yeah, so if it's like a cartoon, we say, yes, that's a cartoon. But if it's close to being human, we point out all the little things that are not working.
Yeah, we might think it's a zombie.
Paul, you've been able to create a realistic digital double by photographing actors like Stephen inside a light stage, this giant little lit-up buckyball that we have right there. What's going on inside of that thing?
Well, we've built a few of these things at the USC Institute for Creative Technologies, and it's a controlled lighting sphere where we can change the color, the polarization, the intensity, and the directionality of the lighting and take high-resolution photos. And we've come down to just the right photos we need to take from the right angles in order to have the data we need to solve for a 3D representation of somebody's face and all of the ways that skin can reflect light so it looks like the real person.
Right. Steve, tell us, Stephen, tell us what it was like inside. What did you have to do? How did it feel?
Well, I'd quote... William Shatner on it. It's like being bombarded with gamma rays, although I have no idea what gamma rays are or what it feels to be bombarded like them. But I'll tell you what it really reminded me of is 19th century collodion photography, which I've had occasion to pose for. You have to sit stock still. Of course, they'll put a brace behind your head to do it. And I remember while I was in this rig here being uncomfortably still, it being a requirement for a long, long time. So I suppose the more things change, the more they stay the same in some respect, just to get the proper image.
Right. Sounds like you're getting your MRI of your whole body or you can't move.
Well, and you can't get out of there either.
Right? Let's see what actually happened. There's the image.
Yeah, I like that image so much, I use it as the masthead for my Twitter account. But it's an homage to DeBevick that I do that, because I look much better digitally than I do in real life, as far as
you
I'm
like
concerned.
You like those scars on your face?
I love them. You know girls like them, too. Yeah. So the
funny thing is, we did the scan toward the end of the Avatar production, and Steven's hair had actually grown back over the area where the scars are. So if you look closely, you can see the scars actually go on top of his hair a little bit on the left image there.
I have to watch the movie one
more.
So
don't look closely.
Can you tell when it's you or not you up on the screen there, whether it's the digital double or not?
No, I know that in the battle with Sully, whenever I'm in the AM suit and the AM suit is being very, very active, I know it's the digital me, but I get pretty caught up in the story as well. And you know, I basically look at creating a role like this is really a collaboration between a lot of people. I take a certain amount of credit for it, but I also, you know, you got to give credit where credit is due to the animators as well.
Yeah, if you've got a question in the audience, want to ask a question, then I'll put your hand up and we'll get the microphone over to you. Paul, have we crossed that uncanny valley at this point? It looks so good. Right? It's very believable.
So we've had a few digital characters in movies that have done very well. The longest screen time that we've seen of a fully digital actor was the old version of Brad Pitt in The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, work done by Digital Domain. We've seen some other attempts that weren't quite as successful. So I'd say that, you know, it's like maybe we've made a couple of trips across the Uncanny Valley, but we haven't, you know, set up camp over there yet. Occasionally people also get lost on the way.
What were some of those unsuccessful ones?
Oh, my gosh. Well, this is where a lot of people laud the effort to create the young version of Jeff Bridges in Tron Legacy, but say that it did not do as well as Benjamin Button. As it turns out, it's actually much harder to do a younger person than an older person, and also to create, like, we don't know what Brad Pitt's going to look like in 30 years, but we know exactly what Jeff Bridges looked like in the 1980s, so it's a much harder target to shoot for.
Let's go to the audience for a question here.
Why is creating a digital double of an actor's face easier than just using the actor?
Yeah,
that's a great question. So in that scene you saw from Avatar, everything in that shot is done with computer graphics, amazing work by Weta Digital in New Zealand that got our face scans. The jungle is all digital, the amp suit is digital, the lighting is all simulated digitally here. And so if they had just taken video of Steven and tried to paste it in, the lighting wouldn't have matched, the forces on his body would have been very difficult to match. They do things like that for some of the shots, but for that kind of shot where it's a medium shot and you can see absolutely everything and how it interacts with each other, it's so much easier if it's all digital and you can just solve for one lighting solution and then it looks realistic.
Also, the amp suit is really the issue here. We had several versions of the amp suit, including the real-life 16-footer, but of course the real-life 16-footer can't do what that does. As a matter of fact, it can take one step forward, which gives you, you know, room to cut
right.
away from.
Right.
So really, we're serving the amp suit in this case. And in fact, the only time during the filming of Avatar where I had to do exclusive mocap work was when the amp suit was involved. The sequels will be quite different.
Wait for the sequel. Do you think any real people will be in the sequel?
No, I'm subletting my image to them for the next 3 years while I go off into a television series.
Oh, wow. Well, let's think. So you can sort of lease your...
Listen, if the actors work hard in these films, it's I know it's become a big issue.
Yeah.
Should motion capture actors be recognized for their work? And, I mean, you just have to look at the work that Zoe Saldana does in Avatar or that Andy Serkis does in Planet of the Apes or as Gollum in Lord of the Rings to know that those are great performances.
So there's no real philosophical fear that actors, human flesh of bones, are going to be done away with.
Well, I don't know if it's a philosophical fear, but I think that there are some real business issues to come up and some issues of ethics to come up in this. But, you know, the concept that my data can be banked and that, in fact, I can do seven films simultaneously, or I can do films long after I'm dead. You know, I may actually go into porno 10 years after I'm dead.
Okay.
So it depends who controls my rights, you
That's
know?
Right. That's
so
right.
So I think Paul? It's important to point out that so far... we're still on the other thing, okay. It's important to point out that every good performance by a digital actor has been good because there was a real performance of a real human actor who's created that character, worked with the director to get a good performance, and it has been used to faithfully drive the digital character. That line of dialogue you have in there, you absolutely said that line of dialogue, and the people at Weta used everything they were able to capture of it to drive the digital character. We're still decades away from the artificial intelligence breakthroughs that'll be required to replace what an actor might actually do, and I mean, why would you bother with that? It's like actors are really good at this.
Yeah.
And it's an old profession. You know, yeah. I'm not really concerned about it. We've been around from the beginning, and we'll probably be there at the end.
Right. And who are you gonna recognize in a restaurant if it's an avatar? No autographs on that
I think
that
a
one.
Navi would get recognized in a restaurant right away, actually.
A vegan restaurant, no doubt.
You brought this up in jest about... you could be acting after you're dead, mm-hmm. right? But there are all these actors, there are all these old images of actors who are dead. Oh, I see popping up in commercials and things like that. So it's not really science fiction,
no.
is it? I mean, it's possible to bring people back and put them in a movie.
It is, and I don't know how I feel about that. As much as I would love to have done a film with Bogart, you know, it wouldn't be the same being in one, him.
He did have Lauren Bacall in the real flesh.
Yeah.
And, so, did you want to say something?
Yeah. If anyone watched the Billboard Music Awards, there was in the middle of the show a performance by some version of Michael Jackson, and it was pretty convincing. It was him actually singing, fortunately, but all of the facial expressions and the way that it would interact with, we helped with this a little bit, were done based on lots of reference and what you can put together from what's around today.
This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. What about the issue of you're an avatar and you're in that amp suit and there's digital capture going on. You're acting in the suit. There are animators around filling in other things. Who gets the Oscar for that?
At the moment, none of us
do. I think Stephen should.
you know, it all goes to the technical effects, I think. But you know, the way I look at it, it's eventually someone will get tapped for a nomination for an extraordinary performance. But when you're talking about how many of our films come out every year, and there's so many wonderful Oscar-worthy performances that are made, I can understand why you would choose not to nominate,
right.
you know, a mocap performance, I think. But I think there'll come a time when they will, or else they'll create another type of award,
right.
I would think.
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
film is a very collaborative process, and already any individual who works in a movie is supported by tons of other crafts and technicians. There are actually 2,140 names in the credits of Avatar. And the Oscars go to a few unique individuals who are at the top of this. It could go to a motion capture actor just as easily as a real actor, and I think that there's an understanding within the acting community that that's a wonderful way to practice the craft today as well.
They're starting to get that, because I think people were a bit afraid of it, and still are to some extent, but just 2 weeks ago, you know, Ellen Burstyn, who's a pal and an actor who's been working for a long, long time, said, Stephen, I really want to do that motion capture. I want to get into that motion capture. And there's just this craving to do something you haven't done before, to work in a milieu that you haven't worked in before. And motion capture brings you right back to the fundamentals of acting because it's totally imagination-based. You have to create everything.
Well, Stephen, an Avatar sequel you said is coming up. Is going to be even more digital? And give us an idea of what we could see?
Well, there'll be... we're going to be filming the next Avatar 2, 3, and 4 simultaneously, so that in itself should be quite an adventure.
Really? 2, 3, and 4?
Simultaneously. So it's, you know, what film are we doing today? You know, so that should be pretty exciting. And I think that just because of the nature, Jim Cameron, Paul knows him well, he's going to create scenarios which create problems for himself, technical problems. It's just what he does, and so they'll have to come up with new solutions.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't you die in the last movie?
Ira, it is science fiction, you know.
I keep forgetting that. Thank you, gentlemen. This is excellent. Thank you. Stephen Lang, actor known for his role in Avatar and Gods and Generals, and 2, 3, 4 Avatars to come. Paul Dubevec is chief visual officer at USC's Institute for Creative Technologies. Fascinating. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking time.
Thank you.
That's about all the time we have. B.J. Lederman composed our theme music. Our thanks to Bob Isaacson and our production partners at the studios of the City University of New York. And we have a special shout-out to our friends at KPCC, Bill Davis, John Cohn, Liz Brown, David McKeever, Sandin Totten, Steve Gregory, John Horn, Tony Federico, Haley Waters, and Levi Petrie. And here at Caltech, Eric Wood and Judy Asbury. Also thanks to Susan Lieberman, Kate Folb, and Lizzie Jane Klein, Dwayne Miles, Noreen Kimura, Eric Ferguson, and Jeff Lewis. And we can't forget our Science Friday staff, Charles Berquist, Danielle Dana, Brandon Ector, Pamela Ellerman, Jennifer Fennick, Sam Flato, Becky Fogel, Luke Raskin, Christopher Intagliata, Jen Kwok, Julie Leibach, Alexa Lim, Annie Minoff, Annie Nero, Christian Scotta, Chow Tu, and Ariel Zitch. We want to thank you all for the wonderful work you did. And everyone who couldn't join us in Pasadena, not to worry. We've got the video of this event. If you'd like to see it as many times as you'd like, you can go to our website, sciencefriday.com/Pasadena. And believe me, you don't want to miss this KPCC Sandin Totten showing us how sci-fi inventions can inspire real-world innovations. And finally, Caltech physicist Sean Carroll, judging a match of movie science wits, Caltech versus NASA's JPL. Who's going to win? You're going to have to watch the video to find out. That's sciencefriday.com/Pasadena. In Pasadena, I'm Ira Flato.